Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined with Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
So we are doing something different. It's the end of the year. It's a time of reflection. It's a time of, you know, getting started and looking at the new year. So we are going to talk about reading, like the act of reading. And we have a couple of different angles we wanted to talk about. I don't know, how do you want to get started, ladies?
Sure. Well, I think I might start. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about deep reading. And, you know, a lot of the meetings that I attend, sometimes I'm with educators and I hear about this decline of deep reading. And mostly it's like within a high school setting. Deep reading can be considered like slow reading maybe, or let's see, Richard Norquist, looking some things up earlier, he says that it's the active process of thoughtful or deliberate reading carried out to enhance one's comprehension and enjoyment of a text. So when I hear that definition, I'm like, oh, well, that's very academic. You know, that's like what I should have been doing when I was in college or something.
Right.
But I find sometimes that, especially if I'm really overstressed or really tired, I can't get into reading. I won't even remember what I read,
right.
You know? So I really enjoy the concept of like really slowing down and, I don't know, taking it in that way. And it can be really for anything, because I like fiction a lot, and that's kind of some of those stories that I forget the most. It's like, I'm just not okay. Really there when I'm reading it. So.
Yeah. That brings me to kind of thinking about one of my favorite authors, Marianne Wolfe. And Marianne Wolfe is a scholar, teacher, and an advocate for children and literacy, in particular, a researcher for dyslexia. And she has written several books, but the most recent book is Reader Come Home, The Reading Brain in a Digital World. Mm. And she talks a lot about deep reading, long form reading, as she calls it. And what she also discusses in her books is how we read online, how we are reading by the day. We're reading more things quickly. We're getting things on our phones. We're reading a lot of words, but we're reading really brief snippets. We're getting notifications. We're reading texts. Mm-hmm. We're reading pieces of articles for content, but not necessarily slowing down to read. And even being this researcher of the reading brain, she was finding that she herself was having trouble focusing on some of her favorite books. And I have a really brief quote from what she said about that. She tried reading a Hermann Hesse book that she had absolutely loved, one of her favorite books. And she said that her grafted, spasmodic online style of reading, while appropriate for much of my day's ordinary reading, had been transferred indiscriminately to all of my reading, rendering my former immersion in more difficult texts less and less satisfying. So what she did was set out to read in 20-minute segments and really sit and concentrate on the reading to bring that deep reading back. And this book, of course, expounds on that, and it's just a wonderful book about reading in this day and age, and how do we balance our digital lives with our reading in print, and how do children do that, especially when they're learning to read.
When we're talking about deep or slow reading, there are things, I mean, it's a different book for different people, different times. Mm-hmm. I find myself, there are things in my own reading. I'm not slow reading a cozy. That's not quite, you know, the ones with the puns and the titles, you know.
Right.
That's Hummus and Homicide is not the one I'm purposely slowing down to read.
Yeah.
But something like Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern, which I talked about last month, or some of the memoirs that I've read, they're just written in such a way that I want to slow down,
mm-hmm.
Take it in bites. No, don't want it to end. And some, you know, part of it's
I get
just
that
like
feeling
I'm
a lot.
That
I don't want this book to end.
I just don't want to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of when I'm stepping back and doing that.
Yeah. And some books, you know, we have to skim. You know, if we have a deadline coming up and we have to talk about a lot of books, sometimes sometimes they're skimming, but I always hope it's not those types of books that Jessica just mentioned,
right?
Because you don't want to skim those. You want to be able to sit and really savor and enjoy those.
So what about, how do people get going on this? How do you approach reading? What sorts of tips would you give people?
Well, you know, if, I mean, whether you want to do deep reading or even just any kind of more reading, I think, you know, and this is my opinion, of course, if you can, you know, well, turn off the TV, but if you can, turn off your device, any devices that you seem super connected to. It's just, it's really nice to have uninterrupted reading time.
If you read on a device,
that's totally okay. Absolutely.
But it is a matter of figuring out a way to not have the notifications in your face while you're
doing that's
it.
Really what I mean mostly maybe is the phone. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just me. I don't know. And then for me, something I really like doing is reading in the morning. And thank you, Ms. Cheryl. I'm glad you really like that too.
Yeah.
But I have to say I'm not always a morning person and I can't always do that. But even like 10 or 15 minutes, if you can slip it in before you get going in your day, I think a lot of people are really alert in the morning, but maybe they're not. I don't know. I feel like I have a fresh brain and I can take it in.
I totally agree. My problem, and I've explained this to you, both of you before, is that my problem is a lack of self-control in stopping.
Yeah. The night before, you mean?
Either way.
Okay.
If I were to read in the morning.
I see what you mean.
I do actually want to get here on time.
Yeah, sure.
And actually have breakfast and, you know, be appropriately dressed. So I have a hard time. I still have a hard time not picking up a book. I am that kind of reader. I just really kind of. Even there are days when it's just sort of, I just need just a kick, just spot check from my a favorite passage or something just to get me ready for the day. But I also know that if I let myself go in and do a slow read or a deep read, you know, if I let myself go, I will just keep reading. So I tend to not read in the morning for my, that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I also have a terrible time stopping at night. So I do stay up way too late reading books.
Okay. I find that at night, especially as I've gotten older, my mind can't focus as well on reading. Mm-hmm. And that's when I tend to be more drawn to my device, I would say. Not reading on a device, but maybe reading articles, reading headlines, reading social media. But in the morning, I set my alarm at 5 and I read in the morning because I have lots of coffee and it's sort of a zen, almost like a meditative exercise for me to read. My mind is fresh. Mm-hmm. I can focus, but I do need an alarm to set to start getting ready. Because if I don't set the alarm, then I keep worrying that the time is over and that becomes its own form of distraction.
Yes.
But, definitely morning is better for me, but I don't think it matters. But what I think it is being intentional about saying, even as we heard, you know, Marianne Wolfe did here, you know, a reading researcher had to do this, is to do 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, especially if you feel that you've gotten away from reading. I remember in the past couple of years talking to a lot of librarians whose, you know, lives still revolve around books, programming, lots of things, but we're finding that their long-form reading skills were slipping a little bit. And it's one of those things where it's just like kind of riding that bike. If you do know how to read, you just keep getting back into it. It seems like my own reading speed and comprehension have come back and my concentration. But I think it also ties to, you got to pick up a book that you love. Yes. My concentration is poor. If I picked up something, an adventure suspense novel, I probably would have a hard time sticking with it myself. But if I pick up a, you know, science nonfiction book, I'm into it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a key, too, is to not read what everybody's telling you to read.
No.
Maybe the popular bestsellers aren't for you. Find what you like and enjoy.
And something I've had to, you know, learn way, way, way as an adult is, like, it's okay to quit a book.
Mm-hmm.
If you think it's boring or it's just not really for you, just let it go. When I was younger, I was like, oh, I have to finish this. I started it. And, you know, I need to know what happens at the end. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't really care for the storyline or whatever.
And that can be very personal for people. There are people that are never, are always going to finish what they start. And I understand that. I respect that. But kind of early in my career, somebody shared, Nancy Pearl, who's a is still a rock star librarian, though she has been retired for a few years now. You'll see her work in the New York Times and things like that still, her recommendations. But she had a 50-page rule. So if you're 50 years old or younger, give every book about 50 pages before you decide to commit. And then, you know, give it up. If it doesn't work for you, just don't do it. And then it's like, if you're over 50, you just go down for, you know, subtract your age from 100 is what she would suggest. Because there just aren't enough days left. Enough time in the world for all the books you might be interested in reading. So just, you know, feel free. I don't want to sound like a Frozen episode, but let it go. If you don't, if it's not working for you, you do not have to force yourself to read it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is a conversation I've had with my grandmother is going to finish it, it is, whether she likes it or not. At the end of the conversation, you know, at the end of the book, we ask her if she likes it. And she's like, no. I'm like, but why? Yeah. Why read it then? We can find you more books.
Right. So I was listening to a podcast recently on NPR, and it was one of those like youth-oriented ones, like life hacks or something like that. And she really kind of brought back to my mind this idea of taking a book with you everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's actually pretty simple because a lot of the books I read are lower level, you know, picture books or middle grade books. And just like really, like literally taking it with you inside the blood draw station where I was this morning. Mm-hmm. And I know I had like maybe a 4-minute wait, but I could fit that in. And like always having something ready to read, even if it's something that, you know, you're going to be interrupted when your appointment comes up, but still. And then also the idea of giving yourself a treat or a reward. If you want to read more, you know, tie it to a reward, you know. A lot of people do that with exercise or, you know, trying to eat healthy Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday. And then, you know, maybe on Saturday night getting a treat or something like that. But, you know, that's another thing you could think about.
Yeah, I think these things are really helpful, especially if you feel that you were a strong reader and you feel that you're not reading as much anymore. It's sort of that sort of just do it, sort of start and begin somewhere. And then reading becomes its own reward, or you can reward yourself more to get started in the beginning to get that concentration back, because that concentration can be helpful in so many other parts of your life that you get from reading, too. Bringing books with you wherever you go is another suggested item from a book, How to Raise a Reader by Pamela Paul and Maria Russo. This is a book that came out this year, just an excellent book for families, grandparents, aunts and uncles, caregivers, anybody who's involved with children in your life. And it takes children from birth through teens and lays out some tips on how to encourage a reading culture in your home and how to encourage reading with children. And we are in a different social and media climate right now. And what I hear as a parent of a young child is that a lot of parents are concerned about screen time, about how their children are so almost addicted to screen time. And the brain studies are still coming out on what the screens are doing. And so we're really, reading is wonderful. We know the benefits of reading, but it's not always as appealing to children as the screen. And bringing books with you to a restaurant, bringing books on vacation is one of the tips in this book. It was, what books are you bringing on vacation? You know, what books are you bringing here? To encourage that the parents are on board with that idea of having a reading culture at home, of modeling reading, of having books around the house, and of integrating reading into children's lives on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. If I could just mention readingrockets.org, this is a website that I visit quite often, and when looking at it, you think that it's mostly for teachers, but it's actually just really, it has so many good resources for parents. And I bring it up because, you know, we have this Read by Grade 3 law that's, you know, kind of taking effect, and there are a number of kids in the state of Michigan, as, you know, well as other places in the country, that are struggling with reading. And this site just has so many great tips, resources, downloads. I was looking at one section about, you know, having a response for a kid who is saying, oh, I'll never learn to read, or, you know, reading is dumb or whatever, and having, as a parent, or really any adult to a child, having a comeback ready to nurture and encourage that, like, you can do it. You know, empathizing with a child if you know that they're really struggling with a sense of self because of not being a good reader, but just really, trying to arm yourself as a parent to, you know what, I'm gonna try my best to come alongside my child to perhaps influence how they think about reading in order to improve their reading skill, because obviously we need it for school, but it is such a great, great way to pass life, is to read and to think and imagine. So yeah, that's readingrockets.org.
And so many of the bibliotherapy benefits of reading that extend to children.
Yes.
Children struggling with so many issues.
Right.
Children are struggling more and more with depression, anxiety, social problems at school, getting along with other kids. And almost all of those middle grade fiction books have a problem in them.
Yeah.
And even if the particular child doesn't have that particular problem, they can see how the character builds those resilience skills. Mm-hmm. And I always think of that as one of the benefits. And if we don't give our children that somehow, it's just another way to help them arm themselves as they go out into the world.
So let's turn this a little bit. We also kind of talked about both, how do you track your reading? Do you track your reading?
Well, let's just say I've had many starts. I mean, it's... There's been a spiral notebook. There have been index cards. There's been last year, I think I started a Goodreads list, which is pretty easy. But I thank you very much, Jessica Trotter. You have yet again challenged me in my reading goals. I have now a spreadsheet for 2020 that was actually found on
Book Riot.
Riot. Yeah, I was posted by Tirza Price on December 4th, if you need some help trying to look for that, if you want to look at it. But it's a really nice spreadsheet. It's super involved, and you don't have to, I mean, I'm not planning to be as involved with what they have there, but it's super, it looks like it's super easy, and I've got it on my desktop now, so I'm ready. Yeah. In fact, I'm filling it out.
It's a really detailed, you can fill out as much of it as you want or not. But it has ways, I mean, like, the first thing is what you fill out, but it actually has ways. It figures out the statistics of what you've read.
Yeah, I love that part. I was just looking at, in, like, oh, look at these other tabs.
It has a page.
So thank you, Book Riot. That's awesome.
No, this is actually really timely. There's a lot of articles kind of around these topics going, popping up on Book Riot in the last couple of weeks. And then they've also launched their, the subjects for their 2020 Read Harder Challenge, which I've tried to do. I think I've managed it once. There's still a possibility I might finish it this year. I'm about 5 books short, though, so it's not entirely likely. But they come up with this list of, I think, 24 topics. You pick the book that fits the topic. If it works for more than one topic, more power to you. They're all fine with that. But it's just to push you out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, just to go back to tracking, I have this horribly complex spreadsheet that I've been keeping for years. And I have a Library Reads account that anybody can go and see the god-awful list of books that I have read. But I've got bits of spiral notebooks. I've got journals where I've got like 4 pages are devoted, and then the next journal has another page, and then another journal has 2 pages. So it's I have become more serious about it probably since becoming a Reader's Advisory Librarian, because I really do use what I read in so many different ways. So for me, it is a very important part of my work, as much as I love reading and kind of keeping track of what I've read. But it's just one of those things. For me, I'm pushing myself to be a broader reader, to be a more diverse reader. So I am tracking information that way.
Mm-hmm. My system is really low tech.
And that's cool.
But I've been extremely faithful to it this entire year. I started it in about December of last year, and I'm so glad I did, because I really did forget what I had read. I go back and look at that and say, okay, what did I read that month? Oh, okay. But mine is just a nice floral notebook that I like, just, and I use the pen. I keep it in my nightstand, so it's right there when I'm done. I know that I write it. I write in the title, and you know, for this sort of thing, you can make this as complex and as exciting as you want, or you can make it really low tech. I write the title. I say a little bit about it. I use a star system just to kind of say, you know, whether, you know, 5 stars, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad I did, because going back to write, you know, staff picks or that sort of thing, it's so helpful to go back and say, okay, I actually did read this, and this is what I thought of it. So I highly encourage anybody to pick up whatever works for them.
I have an odd question that just occurred to me. Do you track your rereads?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. Yeah.
I don't always think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I even tracked, I read aloud The Gift of the Magi, and right. I read aloud Truman Capote, Christmas Story. It's one of my favorite books. And I even tracked that, because it's fun. It's so fun to go back and look at these.
Yes,
so
it is.
Only
it really
for that
is.
Reason, right. It's fun
no,
to do.
I totally agree.
Don't you wish you had done this when you were a child?
Yes.
I wish I had.
Yeah.
I had such the opposite view. I mean, I was always like, well, why would you read a book again? Or why would you see a movie again?
Yeah.
And especially now that I'm a librarian, I'm like, there's so much that you get out of rereading. So especially favorite books, of course. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
And there are books from childhood that I don't know what they, I remember the magic of those books. I can't figure out what they are. I think maybe they're this book, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
And I even tried it and I can't get that magic back. So I wish I'd tracked it. I'm trying to encourage my 8-year-old daughter to use a reading journal, partially for that purpose, so she can go back and see what she read.
And again, it is actually something I've done off and on for decades. So I mean, if you were to find my unfortunate stack of journals that I have never finished.
I see them as fortunate.
Yes, it is fun to look back and look at them, but
it's fantastic. I mean, I just what a resource to help you.
It is. It's fun. Yes. It's fun to look back on, and it's it's also mortifying on occasion, but because it's mixed in with I did this in school today, and this is what I read. And I love this book, and I'm going to gush about it, because it's pink and purple and has unicorns on it or something like that. I grew up in the time of Lisa Frank. So,
I like mix, grandma's, I don't have a grandma, but, mom's recipe for such and such. Or, by the way, you need to fix this thing in the dishwasher. That's all in one notebook. I'm like, why are these?
Oh, I think that's kind of cool.
Yes. And I have.
A little scattered, but.
Those two,
This idea of the reading journal is covered in a book that I would love to recommend right now. It's called I'd Rather Be Reading, The Delights and Dilemmas of the Reading Life. It's by Anne Bogle, who is a blogger who blogs about books, and Miss Darcy is part of her blog title. And it's just an excellent blog. But this book is a grouping of essays all about different aspects of the reading life, and one of them is about starting and keeping a book journal. And I had been a little spotty in keeping one until I read this book, and she's the person who actually motivated me to do that.
So how do you decide what you're going to read next? Do you have a plan? I know you do, Cheryl.
I do have a plan. I do have a plan, and it's a bit cyclical for me. Different parts of the year draw me to certain topics every year back again. So right now, the plan is a little bit of sort of seasonal, holiday-related type of reading. And then for me, I have Science January, Science and Nature. So I generally read those books. I have them in a basket ready to go. And horse books, I'll be honest. January is that time for me to really focus on those topics. And it's a little bit more of a deep reading time. I think it goes with winter, that quiet time of year. If I'm going to read fiction, and I am the nonfiction selector, so I do read fiction, but not as much as nonfiction. But if I do read fiction, it tends to be more in the summer. So for me, January is that time to really sit down and think, for me, more about some of those topics. So I usually have a plan. It's hard because I keep checking out new things. You know, we buy new things every week.
We place a lot of holds.
We place a lot of holds. So it's how do you fit those in? But I have a plan for January, and it can change, of course.
Right.
But I'm always drawn to certain topics at certain times of the year. Okay. I don't know why. How about you, Maddie?
You know, mine are, it's never super planned out. I mean, it's a lot of book covers that appeal to me. Mm-hmm. A lot of the reading I do is related to kids' materials, which I mostly enjoy. I mean, occasionally I'm like, oh, this is not for me, but it's because I'm not a kid anymore, maybe. I don't know. I have recently been thinking about, like, trying to pick a topic to learn more about, and I think my topic this year is going to be super easy, I hope, and it's really just about cooking with an Instant Pot. I haven't had much success with cooking with a crock pot. I know this may sound funny, but I'm really excited to learn about, like, the science behind an Instant Pot and how to make really yummy recipes. I've got books already, and yeah, I mean, that's not a serious topic, I guess, but I'm determined this year to eat
fun.
A little.
Whatever topic works
exactly.
For you.
Exactly.
If you have really great things, you can share them with us.
Yeah.
And might I say, Cattle has a lot of Instant Pots.
Yes,
Yep.
We do. And I guess for my read harder is I really want to read more science fiction and maybe just a tiny bit of horror, because those aren't things I read much about, even kids or adult. I just don't read those types of books. And I'm always curious about, like, wow, this sounds really interesting.
It's a hodgepodge for me. there are a couple of things that sort of keep me in line because I do participate in Library Reads, which is a national program where librarians vote for titles, forthcoming titles. Like, we get advanced reading copies of items, and, you know, like, the due date to get your vote in is like the first of the month for a list that's going to be announced in the middle, like, the middle of the next month. So it's, I'm doing that, and so I will, you know, if the book is coming out in December, then I'm trying really hard to get it read by December 1st for it to make the list for my vote to count. So I can sort by due dates that way. But I also am always putting something on hold and always finding something else. I do try to do kind of, I have been trying to do the Book Riot Read Harder challenge. And I've also just been trying to challenge myself to read more diversely. So, which is working, and it's been so much fun, because there really is so much strong, beautiful writing going on, and getting better press even too. I mean, the things like Machado's book or Saeed Jones's memoirs, those are two things that just really appeal to me. But in other ways, I'm just, I have piles all over the place of books. You can only imagine there are falling over piles of books that I want to read, and there's way too many of them, and that doesn't count anything that I have loaded to a device to. So it's just, I tend to be, when we talk about, you know, taking a book wherever you go, I'm in the kind of the opposite end of that. I had sort of, when we were talking about how we were going to do this, I'm thinking to myself, I kind of go overboard. I might have like two or three books, and I really don't get much time to, I mean, we read it. Librarians don't actually get to read at work, just so you know.
Unfortunately.
I wish we did, but we really, at least we don't. This is not something that we can do. So I get my lunch and my breaks. I don't really need to carry around three possible options and a tablet every day. And I said that, and then I went and actually looked in my bag and realized I had about six books. So I get carried away in the other direction. I do this for vacations. I always have too many books when I know that I'm not going to be able to do this. But it's interesting to try, and I'm always kind of dithering about what I want to read next. But sometimes I just, you know, if I finish something, you get that, if you're familiar with the book hangover type feeling, and like, I need to find something maybe different, totally different, or maybe I need to be, maybe it needs to be the book that's really like it to kind of keep that feeling going, but I want options when I get to the end of something. And I do sometimes read more than one book at a time, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I often do.
I have a hard time with that. I do if I have to, but I feel like I really want to focus on the one and then move to the other. So I rarely read more than one at a time. But I know a lot of people do. And I know a lot of people listen to books. I know when I had a commute, I listened, had a commute for maybe 18 years. I read by listening to so many books. And if anybody feels bad about listening to books instead of reading, they never reading. Should.
No.
It's absolutely 100% reading. And we really encourage that. We have a lot of different ways that people can get audiobooks, electronic audiobooks, different formats. And, of course, we still have books on CD for checking out for those who have those in their car.
So, yeah.
I wanted to mention a few books about reading. I love nonfiction books about books. There's just so many really excellent ones to recommend. One of my favorites is 84 Charing Cross Road. It's a 1970 book by Helen Hampf. It's a nonfiction book, and it's a series of correspondences between the author and a bookseller in London. And she has really unique, sort of esoteric, rare tastes in books, and she has them sent to the United States from England. And she develops this really wonderful, warm friendship over a long period of time with the bookseller. And it's an excellent book. It was made into a movie by Anthony Hopkins, with Anthony Hopkins starring in it. So it's just a wonderful one to recommend. Also really enjoy some of the Penguin Classics books that have come out recently. And if you want to add to your TBR, to-be-read pile, if you love classics, these are dangerous books to look at if you don't want more things to read. We have the Penguin Classics book that just came out the last couple months. It is a huge orange tome, just like the classic Penguin books. And it's filled with more books to read, going all the way back. And then there's also Classic Penguin cover to cover. And this one actually features on the cover art for Penguin books, which is just fantastic. Everything from the Shakespeare series to the different historical series to the mystery series, and how the different covers actually have a pattern, how collectors collect them based on the covers. So those are just a few of my books about book favorites.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on this that we want to not miss? All right. Well, as we started, you know, this is a time of we're looking back on our reading and reflecting. And so let's close out with your choice. What you're reading now, something you just don't want people to miss that you read earlier. I know, Cheryl, you weren't with us at the beginning of the year, so there may be something you want to get out that way. But, you know, what else should they know about?
I really want to recommend everyone who's really interested in YA fiction, or even if you're not, Patron Saints of Nothing by Randy Rebbe. I have been reading through this. I had picked it up earlier in the year, and now it's kind of on my TBF list, so to be finished. But Jay Reguero he's a Filipino-American teen boy. He's finishing his senior year. And, you know, he's a video game person. He's off to the University of Michigan soon. And he comes from a pretty affluent family. And the thing about him is that he has a family in the Philippines that he still keeps in touch with, and he learns that his cousin is murdered. So he decides to go out to find out why, because no one is telling him why in his family. And he has the luxury to do that, so that's one thing I noticed. But I was attracted to the story, first of all, because it's set in the Detroit suburbs, although upon reading it, I'm like, I'm not sure that there's that much Detroit-ish stuff in this book. But anyway, I learned so much more about President Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines. And if you don't know much about him. I know I remember hearing not very good things about this president. And he still has a lot of support from the Filipino people. But he does, you know, he has a record on human rights. Not so good. And anyway, this is, did I mention, a National Book Award finalist for young people's literature? And probably why I was most attracted. It's got those themes of faith and family, immigrant family identity, that I always just really love to read about.
So. Yeah, that sounds great.
How about you, Cheryl?
Well, I'd like to go back just to a few that I didn't get to talk about because I joined the team here, I think, in July of this year.
Yep.
Two, and these also were books that were published so early in 2019 that I forgot that I had read them.
Were.
And
yes.
The book journal helped me remember. Two of my actual favorite reads for the year were Women Rowing North by Mary Pfeiffer. Mm-hmm. And Mary Pfeiffer is the reviving Ophelia author, many other wonderful, beautiful books. She also has a wonderful Facebook page where she just writes little snippets about her life, and they're as beautiful as her books. But this is a book about women and aging. And in particular, women in like 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and about life at that stage. And it goes through different aspects of life. She actually has interviewed women in different life phases, and she has sort of uses different names, but she tells stories through their lives. And it's an absolutely a beautiful work, really reflective, and just an excellent book for women of all ages, I think. And then the other one is Let's Go So We Can Get Back by Jeff Tweedy. He's the lead singer of Wilco. And this was an absolutely phenomenal music memoir. It wasn't just a music memoir, and it was fun because I love Wilco. It was a really well-written, really beautiful piece of work. And again, about sort of identity and about being at a phase of life where Jeff Tweedy is really reflective on where he's been, where he's going. His aging parents have passed away, and he reflects on that and where he's at with his own children and the history of his music. It was just a fantastic, really good read. Probably one of my best books of all time. So,
very cool.
Excellent.
I've got one that I would say I could kind of kick myself for not. I got it as an ARC really early and knew I was going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Didn't know I was going to love it. Just finished it. I sort of, as a side from doing library reads, I also, if anybody does Twitter, it does participate on Twitter, there you should check out, there's a hashtag libfaves19, so LIBFAVES 19, where librarians across the country are posting their top 10 books of the year, not necessarily in order, but they're taking 10 days to post a book a day. I knew this was going to be a busy week, so I scheduled all my tweets. I did all the hard work of trying to figure out what those 10 titles were going to be, scheduled them all out so I didn't have to think about it. And then on Tuesday night, I read this book. I started this book and thought, oh, well, that just screws up that whole list. So I'm just going to have to kind of do some shuffling and because this absolutely needs to be on the list. And the thing, it's called This Is How You Lose the Time War. It's by Amal El-Mohtar and Max Gladstone. It's been described as the time-traveling queer epistolary romance that you didn't know you needed. It's wonderful. It's two agents on the opposite sides of a war just seem to keep finding themselves up against each other. They're, you know, solo agents. Mm-hmm. It is fantastical. It is science. It's sort of a more of a natural-based group on one side and a technology-based group on the other. And then it's, so they have this going, but they seem to always end up, they're fairly singular agents working on things. So they just always seem to be matched up and they just fascinate each other. And they just start this weird, neat correspondence.
Ah, cool.
And they're beautiful letters. Mm. They're weird in the sense that it's sort of like, they're in their setting, whatever it is, and something catches their eye, whether it's something, a plant that isn't quite the way it should be, or a bit of technology that isn't quite the way it should be, and somehow there is a letter embedded in this, and then you get the letter. You know, you see them discovering it, and then you get this letter, and they just end up falling for each other, which is, you know, they're on the opposite ends of an army, opposite ends of a war. It's one of those things where this is only going to work for so long before people start figuring out that they're not actually trying to stop each other anymore. But it's not a long book. I think it's maybe 200 pages. But it's just the letters back and forth are fabulous.
Oh, it sounds really good.
So that got added to my list. And then I'm reading something that I totally would never have guessed I'd be reading, and totally outside of my comfort zone. Going back to our earlier conversation, this is something I'm listening to, but I actually have both the physical book and an ebook, so I'm kind of reading it whenever I get a chance to read it. And that's actually Ronan Farrow's Catch and Kill, which is, he is a great writer, and he is not comfortable being kind of the center part of the story, the story is about, it's the Harvey Weinstein case and the Me Too movement, but it's also very much about the networks and the news being shut down by really wealthy people when they don't want a story to get out. Yeah. And it's him, and it's the most outlandish when you kind of step back and think about it. He was followed by former Israeli spies at the behest of Harvey Weinstein.
Wow.
He was dogged by different groups, different people, some of which I found, it's all, the whole Harvey Weinstein part of it is just horrible. It's horrible mm-hmm. what was gotten away with, nobody's paid for yet. It's hard to read in that sense. The women's stories in particular are very hard to read. But it's just fascinating that it's been allowed to go on so long and that he pushed really hard. And he makes a point, I think I might have said this someplace else, but he makes the very big point that he was one of those people that he is the son of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen. And so there's this case in his family mm-hmm. that he had to learn. He was one of those people that kind of said, why can't you just not talk about it anymore? In the case of his sister Dylan's accusing her father mm-hmm. of misconduct. But it's sort of like, he did, and he gets it, and he sticks with this case after all of these people have talked to him, and he's heard all their stories, and it's important. And having people tell him, I don't know if that's newsworthy. I find myself kind of yelling at the people in the car when I'm listening to it, as he's saying what they said to him. But it's just one of those, it's a really well-done audiobook. He actually does the reading himself. And I have found myself taking the time, it's not necessarily a deep read or a slow read for me, but I'm taking the time to pick it up wherever I can.
Yeah.
So I am listening to it in the car, and then I'm picking it up, and I just keep changing my place in the books if I've listened to it in the car, and keep going. So,
can I ask a question about the
yeah.
book? Are Weinstein and Woody Allen, are they painted as people who are work together at all, or were very close? I know they're obviously in the same industry, but
the interesting thing is this is a case where he was actually assigned this case. This isn't something he went looking for. Ronan was assigned this case by NBC.
Really?
Which his bosses conveniently forget as things get.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really, one of the first things everybody does, one of the first things legal does before they even get started is, let's do a dive and figure out what we can, are there ways to tie Harvey to either your mother or your father?
Okay.
And he's worked with both of them. He is he's in the industry, he's been such a major figure in the industry for so long that, yes, he's produced for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
While at different times, as the story's going along, people say, oh, well, you just had an extra grind. That's really not mm-hmm. the way any of this looks in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, but he does have the knowledge of not being as supportive all the time of Dylan. That's a different thing, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
So it's a really... Yeah, it's a really interesting story and a really unsettling one when you're looking at the top levels of, really, this does not paint NBC in any good light because they did shut the story down.
Wow.
At Weinstein's orders.
Hmm.
So it's interesting. I think that's what we have for this week. This has been fun talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
So have a wonderful holiday season.
Okay, thank you.